This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Republican candidate for governor, Jeannie Ives, who currently is a state representative, has been since 2012, serving the west suburbs of Chicago, including Wheaton, West Chicago, parts of Naperville, and more. Jeannie Ives is a veteran of West Point Military Academy, where she served for 5 years after her graduation with a bachelor's degree in economics. She said, "I am a pro-choice candidate for governor, giving Illinois a choice for governor between what she calls Governor Rauner, who did not lead the revolt that he promised to lead and who has deserted Republican policies. She will give the voters a choice in the primary." She talked about certain issues that have to be addressed. Property taxes. A freeze on property taxes isn't a solution. She said we must rework the entire system. Ives supports school consolidation. She says we could easily reduce the number of school districts from 860 to about 400. She wants a hard cap on state government spending and meaningful pension reform. Every new hire should be forced to enroll in a 401k that already exists for university employees. Jeannie Ives commented that if you don't have an inquiring mind and you're not afraid to tilt windmills, then you should run for office. She said, "I have a very inquiring mind. I'm not afraid to tilt windmills. I think I will make a great Republican governor." The current governor, Governor Rauner, she said, has a left-wing social agenda that is very, very extreme and at odds with the majority of the Republican Party. She says she has 6 weeks to educate 800,000 GOP voters about the governor and where the GOP should be heading. Finally, she said, "I will be out working the precincts, meeting people, and pushing what I call the true Republican agenda."
Well, do I have everybody's attention now? Good. Good afternoon. It's an honor to be at the City Club. I want to thank Jay Doherty and Dr. Ed Mazur for having me here today. My name is Jeannie Ives. I'm a West Point grad, as my husband Paul is, and he took off from work today to be with me today. Thank you so much, Paul. I'm also the mom of 5 children and the proud coach of the championship cross-country team at St. Michael's Grade School in Wheaton, where my kids went to school. Currently, though, I do serve as a state representative in the Wheaton area, where I was first elected in 2012. 2 of our boys are in the service right now. Matt is an Army Ranger, currently stationed in Alaska, and Nick is a Navy pilot in training down in Texas. We also think our other 3 kids are pretty cool. Andrew attends Ole Miss, where he's studying accounting. Joe is a junior at Wheaton Warrenville South High School, and unfortunately, I've missed way too many of his basketball games this season. And Louisa is an 8th grader at St. Michael's. And this April, we will make our last tuition payment after 22 continuous years with kids at St. Michael's. Now, I know there are people here chomping at the bit to chomp me to bits.
Not here.
But there is nothing like a primary election to shake up Springfield and bring back Illinois. But before we begin the policy discussion, I want to share the story of how and why I went from a farming community in South Dakota to West Point and then to Illinois. I grew up in Vermilion, South Dakota. A little side note here, J.B. Pritzker's wife, Mary, did so too. I am 1 of 6 children, and we all grew up working on our uncle's farms. I was fortunate to have loving parents, good teachers, and a safe community that provided plenty of wholesome activities for kids to be involved in. I applied to West Point looking for a challenge, an opportunity to go to a great school, and because I felt the need to do my part to serve our country as my father, grandfather, and nearly all of my uncles did. I entered West Point when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States, and his military doctrine could be summed up in two phrases: peace through strength, and Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. You see, Ronald Reagan understood a thing or two about making public challenges to political leaders and then backing those up with action. After graduation, while Paul and I were stationed in West Germany, the wall separating West and East Germany came down. It was a historic moment I will never forget. And Ronald Reagan proved again, as our best leaders have before, that building coalitions and strong leadership delivers results. Fast forward to the early 1990s. My husband decided to exit the Army and began to look for a job. He found that opportunity in Illinois. And around the same time, my brother Dominic moved to Illinois for a job. And so did my brother Paul. And so did my brother Matt. Four of the six of us siblings found job opportunities in Illinois in the early 1990s. And we all put down roots, grew our families, and invested in our communities. And now watch as our older children find their opportunities elsewhere. But here's the rest of the story. Our sister Sarah still lives in South Dakota. And 2 months ago, Sarah called me and said, there's a couple from DuPage County wanting to look at homes in South Dakota. So that couple drove 8 hours from DuPage County to Vermilion, South Dakota, looked at seven homes, and bought one that same day. And Sarah says to them, well, what brings you to Vermilion, South Dakota? You got a job here? You got parents here? They said, no, we've never been here before. But we cannot afford our property taxes in the state of Illinois, and we need an affordable place for our kids to go to college. So they left Illinois. They left Illinois, and they moved to South Dakota, where there is no state income tax and one half of the property taxes. And I know it may sound distant to you, and you probably think that South Dakota is backwards, but they actually do have paved roads, police departments, fire departments, and public schools, because I graduated from public school and went to West Point. This is the story of Illinois two decades hence, and this is the biggest indictment of the current political power structure in Illinois, that so many families have left, are leaving, or want to leave a state as great as ours. According to Gallup, Illinois is number one in the country in the percentage of its residents who believe they live in the worst state. Number one in the nation in the percentage of people who want to leave. 50% of Illinois residents say they want to leave. And we are number one in actual out-migration. And the reason is simple: our politics. People are being driven out of our state they don't otherwise want to leave because our politics makes it unaffordable and undesirable to remain. It's so bad, even the politicians are leaving. We've had some 30 retirements from the General Assembly this year. They've given up, but I haven't. Yeah. I know a few things that most people don't, or at least won't acknowledge. For example, I know that Democrat legislators in the House are not zombies under the mind control of Mike Madigan. Many of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are fully aware of the severity of the problems Illinois faces and want a governor they can work with to make Illinois a vibrant, fiscally stable state that fulfills its service responsibilities to Illinois families. I know because I have been able to work with people with whom I generally disagree on issues where we do agree, as I did with Rep. Greg Harris on a bill to ensure adequate access to health care. Of course, the Speaker is powerful. Of course, he has gotten his way much more than not over the past three decades, and that has been a detriment to Illinois. However, you have to deal with the world you're given. The challenge in politics, if you want to move a policy agenda, is to align interests, build coalitions. To do so requires first that you have a case to make, and you're willing and able to get out there and make it. If the Republican Party is being honest with itself, we have not done a very good job of making the arguments for our policy solutions and building the coalitions of support. We must take our case to the people where they live. And I am doing that, and I want to do that. And as governor, I will continue to do that. I want to tackle three public policy areas today: property taxes, general state spending, and public corruption. And then I'll tackle some of the responses to one of my recent TV ads. On property taxes, the first thing we should do after we sell the Thompson Center is move the state of Illinois headquarters for the northern area from downtown Chicago to the heart of South Suburban Cook County, a region decimated by confiscatory property taxes. We need to be on site where the problem is at its worst. Do you think there's a case to be made to the residents of Riverdale, for example, who pay a 7% effective property tax rate as a percentage of home value? That's 6 times the national average and 3 times the Illinois average. I think there is a case to be made, which is why I went there just last Friday to make it. Do you think those constituents aren't interested in structural property tax relief in Riverdale, whose homes are being taken from them with loan shark rates on property taxes? I know they are interested in this conversation. And I know it's the same on the west side as well. For middle-income families like mine in the suburbs, the situation is only slightly less bad. I'll use my family and our home as an example. I'm paying $1,200 a month in property taxes right now. But I consider myself fortunate. My home value has only stagnated. So many Illinois families are experiencing a negative return, taking a huge loss, underwater on their mortgage, or otherwise trying to figure out how to prevent their home from being taken out from underneath them because of property taxes. This is the conversation dominating the suburbs and preventing economic growth on the south and west sides of the city and elsewhere in Illinois. We need to rethink how we fund, as well as how much we spend, on K through 12 education in Illinois and from where the majority of the resources come. We need to impose a discipline on spending in government, including our schools, that forces accountable decision making. We can't wait for the discipline. It has to be imposed, or the outmigration continues and the exit planning after retirement, or when the kids are out of school, or when the elderly parents pass on. Look, I've heard all the reasons for their exit strategy. And you know what? So have you. Our schools are over-reliant on local property taxes. Our cost structures are not aligned, and our inputs do not give commensurate outputs in terms of student achievement or with nearly everything else government purchases in Illinois. A freeze, as Rauner has proposed, but has done nothing to advance, is an anemic measure. Locking in the highest property taxes in the nation provides no relief. That's why I support a 1% hard cap on property taxes as a percentage of home value, like Indiana has. It's made things in the Hoosier State much better. At least that's what I hear from former Illinois residents who live there now. That's why I support school consolidation, starting first with school districts being a unit. Every school district should be a unit district. Superintendents should be held accountable for the continuum of results throughout the entire K through 12 experience in their district. And we could go from around 860 school districts to half that number, cutting out the bureaucrats and putting more resources in the classroom. For reference, Florida has one school district per county, 74, plus a few special districts. These are the solutions I'm explaining and debating and discussing with families while on the campaign trail. But speaking at venues like this is important. Getting quick hitter messages out through the media is important. But nothing is more important than constant, relentless engagement with families who have played by the rules in this state only to see their homes being taken and their jobs disappearing. The people know things are bad. They aren't buying the politicians' don't believe your lying eyes routing. They are adults. They deserve to be leveled with and brought along every step of the way so they understand why a particular policy course is being charted, where it leads, and how we're going to get there. I know there are legislators as well as families throughout Illinois who do not share my party label, but who do share my desire to save their homes and return honor to this state they call home. Enlisting their support for property tax reform is one of the things I will do as governor. Another cap we need in Illinois, connected to the property tax cap, is a hard spending cap in state government. I'll propose instituting a cap on state spending such that spending cannot grow by more than the rate of population growth plus inflation annually. Since 1992, when my family showed up in Illinois, population has grown 10%, inflation 71%, state spending up 153%, property taxes up 170%. Most importantly, and what's bankrupting our state, promises to public employees during that time frame up 593%. And yet income growth during that same period only up 95%. And you wonder why people are leaving. We are lying to ourselves if we think consolidation of townships, rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse, adding tiers to the state pension system for employees not yet hired, and buying office furniture wholesale is the path back to solvency. There is merit in all these ideas, but they simply are not solutions on the scale of our problems. Holding to that cap will require pension reform, and I will focus on solving that issue once and for all, beginning with all new hires having a 401k-style plan that we already have as an option for our state university employees. While this does not cut the current unfunded liabilities, it signals to the bond market, to businesses, to taxpayers, that we are going to stop digging the proverbial hole and stop making promises we can't keep. This plan needs to be enacted at all levels of government. Look, if the U.S. military can do it, so can we. And speaking of pension reform, we are going to make school districts and universities pay the pensions for their employees. No more giving lavish salary and benefit packages away and pushing the pension costs off to other taxpayers. And maybe then school districts like West Chicago, whose teachers are contemplating a strike, will think twice about contracts that pick up the teacher's portion of their pension payment. Maybe then the whole compensation cost will be factored in when negotiating contracts that have 13 sick days, 2 personal days, 180 work days, Cadillac health insurance at bronze prices, and yearly pay increases of 5% and more. You see, we have got to fence the Springfield spenders and the local government spenders in with a hard cap that forces hard choices. And while legislation locking spending cap is preferable so it doesn't get out of hand in the future, if I am governor, I will impose the cap myself by budgeting for it and cutting spending to adhere to it. The last issue I want to address is the problem of willful blindness. Is there a better recent example of willful blindness in Illinois than the absence of an Illinois legislative inspector general for 3 years? Until late last year, the Legislative Ethics Commission had failed to fill the vacancy despite the fact that more than 24 complaints against legislators or staff had been filed with an office that was unoccupied. And this is at the height of the hashtag MeToo movement, no less. Who says, what evidence do you have? Those are the two questions that launched the Edgar County watchdogs. Two gentlemen that I have a lot of respect for. Two gentlemen from downstate Illinois, retired military, who were tired of political corruption locally and wanted to do something about it. After 6 years, their work, mainly through the use of our FOIA laws, has resulted in more corrupt politicians being indicted and leaving from office than has the work of professional lawyers in the Illinois Attorney General's office. Seriously, 289 forced out of office and 166 criminal indictments in 6 years. Remarkable, isn't it? They have also spawned hundreds of citizen watchdog journalists like themselves, similarly inspired to keep an eye on their boards of local and regional government. That's accountability from the bottom up. This is how I know our ordinary citizens care about this state and want to save it from our toxic political culture. But we need some accountability from the top down, too. I am such a fan of the Edgar County guys because the frustration and the right questions not being asked is what got me into politics in the first place. First on Wheaton City Council and now at the State House. One question related to a zoning issue on the Wheaton City Council made the difference in a business locating in the city rather than taking their business elsewhere. A series of questions on the House floor killed a bill that would have allowed Chicago Teacher Pension Fund to skip their payments for three more years. My questions in committee eventually led to the discovery that 55 assessors sat for election in 2016 but were unqualified to do so, and that Perry County hadn't done a property tax reassessment in 35 years. Unfortunately, the legislative process is intentionally chaotic and unfriendly to inquiry by either time restrictions, lack of expertise, or balanced presentation. And then there's the subtle attitude in Springfield that probing questions that cast doubts on the veracity of testimony by a witness or evidence presented are simply impolite. And that's how bad legislation passes through committee and out of the two chambers. Please, if you don't have an inquisitive mind or the courage to speak up, do not run for public office. Lastly, the focus of my time as a state legislator has been on economic issues and structural reform of the state government. Check out the bills I have filed and the arguments I have made. However, I am a cultural conservative, and a cultural conservative who supported Bruce Rauner as my party's nominee in 2014. I continued to support him in the first part of his term as he was pursuing some of his component parts of his turnaround agenda, however ineptly. I believed him when he said he had no social issues agenda. 3 years later, we have found out that's all Bruce Rauner had. Rauner has signed legislation into law so extreme that Democrats didn't even attempt to move it under Governor Quinn with supermajorities in both chambers. I know, because I was there. Rauner's extreme left social agenda combined with his crony bailouts are not reflective of the majority position of Republicans in Illinois and, in many instances, are at odds with the party platform and, in some cases, are at odds with the majority viewpoint of Illinoisans generally. Beyond even the substance of any particular issue is Rauner's character. As State Rep and House Republican floor leader Peter Breen said, Rauner's promises were just flat-out lies. That's why so many of my colleagues are supporting me, or at a minimum, not supporting an incumbent governor of their party. It is a remarkable occurrence. The fact is, on issue after issue, Rauner betrayed the Republican legislative caucuses and Republican families, as well as some Democrats on some of these issues. SB 2814, bailout of Exelon and a $300 rate hike on Illinois families. Only 27 of 73 legislative Republicans voted for it. I voted no. Rauner signed it. On HB 1785, transgender birth certificates. Only 6 of 73 legislative Republicans voted for the bill. I voted no. Rauner signed it. On SB 31, Sanctuary State, only 6 of 73 legislative Republicans voted for that bill. I voted no. Rauner signed it. So what the commercial, and on HB 40, taxpayer funding of abortion on demand, 0 of 73 Republicans voted for that bill. I, of course, voted no. Rauner, of course, signed it. So what the commercial that is generating the expected hysteria from the expected quarters attempted to do, admittedly, provocatively, was to properly and truthfully characterize the extreme issue positions Rauner took and their implications, The commercial does not attack people. It tackles issues by truthfully illustrating the constituencies Rauner has chosen to serve to the exclusion of others. Rauner chose Exelon Fat Cats over taxpayers. Rauner chose ROM and CPS schools over suburban and downstate schools. Rauner chose Planned Parenthood and Personal PAC over pro-lifers, or even simply over abiding the spirit of the Hyde Amendment, which remains in force at the federal level. And Rauner chose the political agenda of the LGBTQ movement over the privacy interests of moms and dads who don't want their daughters forced to be in the same bathrooms and locker rooms as men. This is a real issue being litigated in Palatine, District 211, and across the country. Last month, a Wisconsin school district agreed to pay a transgender student $800,000 to settle a lawsuit she filed in a successful attempt to share bathrooms and overnight sleeping quarters with male high school students. There was a story in the New York Post over the weekend about a father-daughter dance at a Staten Island elementary school being canceled because it offended the trans rights community. I'm sorry, but as parents of a daughter in elementary school, my husband Paul and I are not on board for this. As Christians, we believe every person is made in God's image and deserving of dignity. I respect people who are different than me. I respect people who have different views than me. In fact, it seems that the converse is not true among many of whom I disagree. They shouldn't be silenced, but neither should I, and I won't be. And if I could make one more comment on this topic in the context of the real-world dynamics of this election, and to some extent, all elections. I wish the Sir Galahad theory of politics, I shall win because I am more pure of heart, was true. The occupants of the halls of power would be a lot different. This race would be over. Unfortunately, it isn't. Unfortunately, we have 6 weeks, not 6 months, to break through and capture people's attention, introduce me, educate 800,000 GOP primary voters, and expose Rauner's betrayals to them, and distill it all into a single question we want primary voters asking themselves as they walk in the voting booth, starting with early voting in as little as 3 days. That is simply not possible solely with good editorial board performances. Community events, field work, and the dispassionate presentation of a detailed cases on the merits. I would prefer that method, actually. Obviously, the tone and illustrations of the truth do not comport with everybody's sensibility, but accomplishing the objective described is fraught with risk. Risk is risk that's worth doing, not doing. The truth is uncomfortable for some and ignored by others. Certainly, it has been a stranger to Bruce Rauner during his time as governor. But I was first taught by my parents and then swore a code to my fellow cadets in this country. I will not lie, cheat, or steal, nor tolerate those that do. My husband, Paul, and I... Thank you. My husband, Paul, and I have lived by that code our entire adult lives. We have imparted that sense of honor in our children. And that's the code I will live by as governor. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Representative Ives.
Thank you for having me.
Now I get the pleasure of trying to condense 3 hours' worth of questions, some polite, some impolite, down to 20 minutes. I do want to mention, though, at the outset, that the City Club is following our tradition. We will be having a televised debate with WTTW For City Club members, I would encourage you to check your email for the date and time and how to sign up. For those of you who are not City Club members, you should join. We will have the Democratic gubernatorial candidates will be debating, and it'll be according to the Paul Green rule. What is it, 10% of those candidates who will be polling at least 10% at the time of the debate. So now we have another 4 hours.
I'm willing to join the Democrats if you want.
You may get that chance.
Okay.
Just not in March. And now, from Dave Lundy of Erewhon, who's a member of the City Club, well-known Republican. Well-known Republican. What was the biggest mistake Bruce Rauner made in his first year as governor?
He went on a personal public attack against constituencies that were going to win in the end and didn't realize the lay of the battlefield, didn't understand, quite frankly, that Mike Madigan was there and he's going to have to work with them. And oh, by the way, I'm told that he was told, don't try and do anything legislatively. Run your agencies well, work where you can work, and build coalitions. He didn't do that. And then he took on a fight with the public sector unions, and he had not softened the battlefield for that fight.
Okay, from Wayne Galasek, City Club member. Wayne, are you here?
Okay.
Way in the back. All right. Why do you think you'll have more success against the Madigan machine than Governor Rauner?
Well, there's a couple reasons that I'm going to be far more successful than Governor Rauner. First of all, he's not going to get the opportunity to do it again. But secondly, the truth is that he does not understand policy at all in any level of detail. And you cannot lead a policy revolution that must occur in the state of Illinois if you don't have the details and you don't know what you're doing. I mean, it was so obvious on the Exelon bill. It's so obvious on the school funding bill. The guy let other people handle the policy, didn't hire the right staff, and did not know enough to make the arguments himself. People want to hear from the governor. So I will lead the policy revolution because I know what needs to be done, and I've been studying it for 6 years. The other thing is, though, I'm not afraid to make the arguments and to go wherever I need to do to make the arguments. I'm not afraid to work around Mike Madigan or work with Mike Madigan. I'm not afraid to go to the constituents if the legislators aren't on board. We're going to take this, just like I said in the speech, to every town in the state of Illinois.
Okay, I have to go with Governor Chris Roebling. As a mom of four boys, have you ever had to stop the little boy? Have you ever had to tell the little boys who, or stop the little boys from squabbling over who is in charge?
Look, our sons, they're just great kids. We're blessed. I don't know how it happened, but we're just blessed. And I think it's the benefit of a large family, quite frankly. At some point, you know what? There's nothing left to squabble over because that's just the reality. And you know what? There's too much other work to do, so you just can't put up with it. We didn't have a lot of problems with our kids. We really haven't. I remember one time we took away the Xbox for 6 months. That kind of solved some things. But, you know, they're good kids, and they know who's in charge. They know that Paul and I are in charge. And you know what? That gave them the security. That gave them security. They need to know who's in charge.
Okay, a question from Brian Walker, who needs to join the City Club. He's with the AE Marketing Group. Brian, I don't know if you're here. With pension debt out of control, what solutions do you propose, and how would you plan to accomplish them with a Democrat-controlled legislature?
Well, listen, this is the biggest problem that we have to solve. And we are going to solve it one step at a time. We got in here decades of bad decisions. We're going to get out of here one step at a time. We're going to put us on a path in the next four years that we're solvent in 10 years. The one thing that we have to do, and this I said in the speech, we have to send a signal to the bond market, to residents, to taxpayers, that we are going to stop digging the hole. Every person should be a 401k employee, period, full stop. All new employees should go that way. I've had this conversation already with Chicago police officers, with firefighters, with teachers, with other public sector employees. They get it. They're okay with new hires. Let's make that first step and then handle the rest of the unfunded liability in a measured way. But I'll tell you what, we failed to handle this. There will be, in the near future, I'm talking, I think, in 5 to 6 years, or just one downturn in the market, because I'm not the expert on this one, but the experts told me one downturn in the market in municipal labors in the city of Chicago is up, done, insolvent. Last year, Chicago paid out $1 billion in pension benefits, only took in $100 million. How often is that going to work? How long can you survive that? You can't. Chicago's got a pension balloon payment due in 4 to 5 years. It will double their cost of their pension obligation, double it, and it'll be 25% of their general revenue fund. And there's no way to pay for it. No way to pay for it. You can't put another property tax hike in. You can't, you know, bring back the soda tax. I want to see that happen. All right. Here's one more thing to know. People should know who just sold them out. Pensioners should know who just sold them out. Chicago Democrats just sold them out, and Rauner said nothing. He's not made a public statement on this. He's not sent anything. Do you know what he did?
What?
Well, remember, they sold the Skyway for $2.8 billion. Then they sold off the parking meters for $1 billion. Do you know what they just sold now? The next 40 years of sales tax revenue for the city of Chicago. They're putting it in a special fund where they say they're going to save taxpayers' money by being able to securitize it with a, in the case of default, thereby getting a lower interest rate. But all they're going to do is clear the credit card and borrow more. And watch out. Watch out. If you're a public sector employee in the city of Chicago and you're expecting the pensions, guess who's protected in that deal? Bondholders. Not taxpayers who expect services from the sales tax revenue. Not pensioners who are expecting to get paid out their pension. No, they protected bondholders. The Chicago Democrats did it, and Rauner said nothing. Crane's never said anything until after it was passed. Chicago Tribune never said anything until after it was passed. I found it out in February, and I started talking about it up and down. And I had the bill blocked. I had it completely blocked. Nobody could vote for the darn thing. And then Madigan hid it in the budget bill and passed it anyway.
Oh.
Uh-huh. So you tell me who's protecting pensioners. You tell me who's protecting taxpayers.
Well, staying on that on the pension topic, Robert Meyerhofer has the question, what are the chances of amending the pension clause of the Illinois Constitution?
You know, that's a heavy lift. Amending the Constitution is a heavy lift unless you want to protect transportation assets, apparently. But that has to be done. Not so much for the unfunded liability that currently exists, but certainly if things get out of hand in the future with politicians. So, yeah, we have to do it. I think, look, I'm going to do the Democrat approach to this. I'm going to do the Gina Raimondo approach to this in Rhode Island. It's just that the state is, like, probably 10 times the size, and it's going to take me a little longer. But we're going to travel the state, and we're going to reveal the numbers, and we're going to talk about this issue up and down the state until people figure it out. That's what we're going to do. We're taking the argument to the people, and then they can get their legislators on board. That's what we're going to do, and we will solve this.
Okay, and now for one of those impolite questions. Some people in the Hispanic and LGBT community have called your recent ad edgy and effective. Others have said it's sad and called for a higher level of discourse. What do you say to those who find it edgy and those who find it sad?
Well, I agree. I think it's edgy. Absolutely. I want to know why people are so offended by it. What's offensive about the ad? The ad is a policy ad. That's what it is. It's an accurate depiction of the policies that Rauner put in place. I mean, look, I talk about it on the stump. My literature has all these issues laid out there. The fact that you saw a visual representation of the policies he put in place is maybe considered offensive. I don't understand that. That's exactly who, the fat cat Exelon guy, that's exactly who you bailed out. Hello? The teacher from Chicago Public Schools, that's whose pension you just bailed out. The transgender man, that's exactly what typically a transgender man looks like. I mean,
no,
sir, with all due respect, I've had him show up at my door.
You want to know what's so offensive.
Wait.
You're asking the question, that's what's offensive.
No,
offensive.
What's...
What is offensive?
Paul, wait a minute. Here's the deal. That is an accurate representation of what the policies look like on the ground. So we just put it in a visual.
Okay. Another. Question about your education. This. A tough one. This is, you were in the Army for 5 years, 6 years?
6 years.
This was a significant investment of taxpayers' money. Why did you leave after such a short period of time? Should the commitment be lengthened?
I served my full commitment to the U.S. Army and to the taxpayers of the United States.
I think you've answered this before, but I'll ask it again. What do you mean when you say that Governor Rauner has betrayed the conservative movement in Illinois?
Look, Governor Rauner promised us a policy revolution. He promised us a reform agenda, and he also promised at the same time that he had no social agenda. The truth is that he got 0 for 44 turnaround things done, nothing accomplished on the policy front. So he betrayed us. He did not lead the revolt that he promised he would lead. He just turned his back on everything that the party holds dear and is part of our platform. Look, who lies to a cardinal? Who puts in taxpayer funding of abortion, regardless of how you feel about that issue, in a state that is bankrupt? Who does that? It's nonsense. He has completely betrayed who we Republicans up and down the state, and you know what? We're holding him to account for it. That's what we do in primary elections. We hold people to account for their actions.
Another policy question on a different matter. Bob Gallo of AARP, a City Club member. Bob, you here? Okay. Will you vote to override Governor Rauner's veto of HB 1424? That is meant to protect 36,000 vulnerable seniors from being kicked out of the community care program.
Probably not. I don't know. I have to look at that legislation in depth. But the problem here is that we have not prioritized what we should prioritize, whether it's our elderly or our disabled. And that's the truth, our developmentally disabled. But a lot of these policies have it embedded in them that you must have a $15 minimum wage, that you must provide services that we literally can't afford. So I'm willing to have the conversation to support those most in need, but I'm not going to put in legislation any specific wage, hourly wage amount, or anything like that. And that has been in other legislation, but I don't know if it's in this bill or not, sir. I'll get back to you. But, we'll have to look at the details of that bill and find out where it's going. I can't comment on it other than that.
Okay. Now for our Mark Weiermeyer question. How can we get a debate on TV with you and Governor Rauner?
That's a fair question. He apparently thinks he already debated me, and I doubt after his embarrassing performance he wants to try that again.
Pam Roll, is that right? A City Club member? Are you here, Pam? Okay, Pat Brown. Rauner distanced himself from President Trump. Is there communication with President Trump for support in your campaign?
Not that I know of.
Okay, Jerry Lathan. No, I'm probably messing that up. You're here, Lathan. Who did you vote for in the 2016 GOP presidential primary?
I voted for President Donald Trump, and I had his sign in my yard. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, one more thing about President Trump. I'll tell you what, I am happy about what he's doing with the military, with two kids serving in the military and understanding how training has been decimated under the previous administration and how parts are not getting to where they need to go. And I hear these stories firsthand from my son, Matt, up in Alaska, and Nick. So I'm very appreciative to what he's been doing with the military and restoring confidence in their commander-in-chief and the generals that he's put on the battlefield and, you know, pushing back ISIS, all that. I have full confidence in him, and I look at the policies and beyond the person, and that's what I've done down in Springfield as well.
Okay, we'll take a question from John Tillman, who needs to join the City Club. Governor Rauner's wife is a liberal Democrat. What is your husband's party affiliation, and does it and does it matter?
I don't know if there's a party called Full-Blooded Redneck, but that would be Paul.
Don't qualify yet.
He doesn't qualify yet, but no, Paul's a conservative, but, you know, he votes on the person, quite frankly. So, No, he's not going to be involved. He's too busy earning a living for our family, providing for our own retirement, making sure Louisa gets her grades in on time. So he's got a lot on his plate.
Okay. And one last question to bring us back to policy. What is your position on the following revenue sources? State and local sales tax, and also a tax on the internet, as well as legalizing marijuana sales.
I'm opposed to the legalization of marijuana. I've read the reports. I've read the reports coming out of Colorado, and they're alarming. Homelessness is up. Drug use among teenagers is up over 40%. Trips to the hospital room and emergency room are up double digits. It's frightening. And, Illinois is too great of a state to think that that has to be our revenue source in the future. That is outrageous. Here we are sitting on, an abundance of energy. And all we have to do is change our policies around, and we have an explosion of economic activity in the state. You can't deny it. People want to be in Chicago area. They like the city. They like our suburbs. They like our forest preserves. They like everything about our location. Businesses want to locate here. They're just frightened to do so because they don't know what's coming down the road. So we don't need to go legalization of marijuana. We need to go full-bore business climate reform. That's what we need to do. We won't need to look at these desperate ideas to raise revenue. That said, look, we already are supposed to be taxing internet sales. Don't you fill out your use tax on the IL 1040? Huh? Well, we're supposed to be filling that out. Okay, well, we could check that. We could fix that. But you're supposed to be doing that already. And what was the other part?
Internet sales.
Oh, that was internet sales. Was there another part? Oh, sales taxes. Well, the sales tax thing is interesting because I had a discussion with people that used to advise Governor Rauner who are now advising me. One of them is Dr. Art Laffer. So we had a good conversation. So Mr. Laffer moved from California, resides in Tennessee, and I'll tell you what, he tells that Tennessee story like nobody else can. So they got rid of their investment tax. They got rid of their estate and gift tax. They never had an income tax to begin with. They are one of the bottom 10 for property taxes. And just like I said about South Dakota, he says to me, boy, Jeannie, you'd think we had not a paved road in the state. But you know what? 100 people show up in Nashville every single day to start a new life. 100. You know what? And you know what they have? They have a high sales tax. They swapped out all those taxes. They have a higher sales tax, and I'm just fine with that. If we can align taxes where it's revenue neutral and we can tax consumption over income, I'm for that all day long and twice on Sunday. Thank you.
Join me in thanking Representative Ives for coming here to the City Club.